everybody. My name is Chuck Carper. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I'm very grateful to be here, and I'm very grateful that Susie called me. I have been alcoholic for 5,367 days today. For 30 years of pursuit, I was a social drinker, always drank like a gentleman, and occasionally fell victim to a series of bad breaks. And that's about the extent of honesty I had when I got put into this program. I still count days for two or three reasons. Number one, when I got sober, my peers told me to count days because every day that I stayed sober would be a miracle. And some of them are sitting in here tonight. But when I was in my second month of sobriety at the men's stag in Fulton, where I got most of this program beat into me, I sat next to one of these clowns that you always meet in meetings and looks at you and says, "How long have you been in the program?" And I looked at this yahoo and said, "I'm still a baby counting days." He said, "So am I. How many do you have?" And I said, 56. So we came to the room and asked him how many he had, and he said, 2,859. And I never heard a thing said to us tonight trying to ride 365 in the 2,859. I don't come from an alcoholic family. I didn't start drinking when I was 14. I didn't drink in college, except the occasional smile-like beer. I really didn't start drinking when the Air Corps made an officer and a gentleman around me, and the Germans started shooting at me. And I got so scared I almost turned Catholic, but I got drunk instead. I actually had a very nice Catholic chaplain in Europe assure me that my turn into Catholicism would have no effect on the Messerschmitt 09 pilot. It took me all my life to find out a place where I'm finally different. I finally found out a place in Alcoholics Anonymous where I'm different. I'm an Irish alcoholic Methodist. There aren't many of us around. I was born and raised in New Jersey, went to school in Philadelphia, came to California cadets. In 1943, I was cadet adjutant at Victorville Air Base when Apple Valley was nothing but dude ranches and bombing ranges, which meant I got every weekend off. And one weekend, one of my friends suggested we go to a dude ranch in Apple Valley because all the racks went there for the weekend. I thought that was a great idea. And we went, and I met the owner's niece, and she was a snooty little twit, and she didn't think I was too whippy. So we spent the weekend ignoring each other. And 6 weeks later, we got married. And 4 months later, 4 or 5 months later, I was overseas for a year or so. So on the 4th of July, 1945, I got out of the Army Air Corps, a 22-year-old hotshot captain who wants me available. And nobody wanted me. And 6 months later, with a pregnant wife and no money, I went to work at RCA in Los Angeles, in a warehouse for $153 a month. And I figured my life was over. I drank more than that in the officers' club at 35 cents a drink. But 2 years later, those people said to me, "You're a salesman." And I said, "That's wonderful." And for the first time in my life, I thought I'd die and gone to heaven. Because I thought of how you got ahead, at least at that company. Every Friday night, you go to the local saloon, you drink early times, and you play large poker with the sales manager. And I was off and running, just flying. I'm one of these clowns that alcohol took all the way to the top of the business world in 25 years and all the way to the bottom in less than two. 8 years later, I was the sales manager. Everybody was drinking with me. 1959, I started my own business. I became a manufacturer's rep, the electronics business. This when stereo and hi-fi started to boom. And by 1965, I had 12 employees making money faster than I could spend it. Just flying. And people started telling me I drank too much. Stupid people. Like my wife, my partner, my preacher, my kids, my neighbors, other employees. All those yo-yos understand what it took to fly in my world. And that's why I became a bar breaker. I spent the next few years in the bars and it was wonderful. Except for the last year or so when I'd hit 12 or 14 different bars every day. So no one group of people know I drank so much. I feel sorry for people that get sober at Alcoholics Anonymous without having had a tenure in some of the finer bars in the world. I only populated the bars visited by the world leaders and giants of industry. We ran the world from Michael's on the Santa Ana Freeway. And if we had a problem without a solution, we just had another drink, and a guy came in with the answer, and it was wonderful. In the end, I used to start my mornings out of a little upholstered sewer down to the railroad tracks in Fullerton called the Melody Inn. I don't have to tell you what that looks like. I don't know how many of you stood in the bar at 6:30 in the morning, a guy's putting the money in the drawer. All of a sudden, he sees you sitting there and says, "Oh, hi, Chuck, would you like a drink?" "Oh, I don't know." And by the time the second double stays down, you look around and think, "My God, every time I come here, the same people are here, they really got a problem." And I'm in that sewer 5 or 6 mornings a week. And I'd hit 2 or 3 more of those before I get to my office at 9 o'clock. And my partner would call my wife and say, "I think Chuck's drunk." And my wife would say, "9 o'clock, don't be ridiculous. It's coming out of his ears from last night." And then it'll last me 11:30 when I could go have the businessman's lunch, 6 double Manhattans and a bowl of onion soup. Unless I was on a diet, I'd have a shrimp cocktail. And then it'll last me till 3 o'clock when I could start my way back out to Santa Ana Freeway. Stop at 6 or 7 different bars so no one group of people know I drank too much. 1967, one Friday night with my wife hollering at me, and my brother-in-law sitting there drinking Manhattan with me, and after about the 3rd Manhattan, he looked at me and says, "You know, Chuck, you really ought to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those people did me a lot of good in 1957. And I called Central Office in Santa Ana, and I talked to this clown for a while, and suddenly he suggested to send 2 guys out to my house. I thought, my God, he doesn't know where I live. What do the neighbors think? I guess I envisioned 2 of men driving up the 38 Ford. I said, "No, just tell me where the meetings are." He said, "Well, there's 3 good meetings a week in Fullerton." That was 20 years ago. I guess there's over 50 now just in Fullerton. I said, "I can't go to meetings in Fullerton. I might see somebody I know." So I started going to meetings at the Anaheim Club. And I went to meetings at the Anaheim Club 3 or 4 nights a week for 6 or 7 months. And never had a sip because I never quit drinking. I go to the meetings, smash their ass, smash and sit there and listen to all the things new people were supposed to listen to. All the things that never happened to me. Never been divorced, never been arrested, never been in jail, never lost a job. Only had 2 jobs in my life, owned my own business. Because I was going with my wife, I made her go with me. Going for my wife, I made her go with me. That turned out to be a technical error. One Friday night, they were talking about sponsors. And I figured that's where I'd missed it. So I walked up to some guy and asked him to be my sponsor. Half smashed. And he looked at me and said, "Shut up, sit down, and don't drink for 30 days. I said, "Screw you," split, and never went back. And the next 4 or so years, everything they promised me would happen to me happened to me. All the things that could never happen to me happened to me. Start getting arrested, start going to jail, start going to hospital. It's real nice when you're a 45-year-old big shot. And the highway patrol drives up to your house on a Friday night in July with all the neighbors out on the lawn. And they handcuff you and your car and haul you both away. And you don't know why. And they put you on the Orange County Sheriff's bus, shackled to a bunch of dopers. And all of a sudden the dopers smell you and they say, "Hey man, we got a juicer on the bus tonight." That don't happen to 45-year-old big shots, but it happened to me. You know, that judge told my wife in 1971 that I was a scourge in the face of human society, and the sooner she dumped my ass, the better off the whole family would be. And 2 years ago, my black belt Al-Anon, my Alateen granddaughter and I spoke at a family meeting at a convention. And I'm sitting on that stage listening to my wife and my granddaughter talk. And I thought, where's that judge now? Where is that bum? I got to tell you about this Al-Anon. She pulled one the other night that I just absolutely fell out of the chair. 14 and a half years ago, I'd have decked her. But this time, I laughed my head off. You know, one thing you understand about Al-Anons, they forgive, but they never forget. The year before I got sober, I came home one time and my wife had been leaving these pamphlets around about this hospital that cures you of alcoholism, the old Rolly Hills, pre-shit days. And I went there, I thought I'd put myself in that place. And I was in that hospital an hour, and a nurse walked in my room and says, "What's your favorite drink?" And I said, "Early Times." And she brought me a water glass of Early Times. I thought, now here's a hospital that understands people. I didn't know it was an evasion hospital where they pour the hot booze down and make you puke. They put you in a room the size of a good-sized closet, sit in a barber chair with a big tub in front of you, and I got the best stock bar in Orange County. And in a period of 45 minutes, you drink up to 2 quarts of hot mixed booze. And that's all chic is. They'd start me out with 4 hot Manhattans, 5 hot scotch and sodas, 3 hot beers, 3 hot martinis, 200-proof Chinese red wine, wonderful stuff. All hot and all mixed. And obviously, the more you drink, the more you puke. And this big bucket they give you, and the more you puke, the more the nurse pats you on the back and tells you how well you're getting. And when you get out, they give you a card that says, "Recovered alcoholic." And on the back it says, "In case of emergency, do not administer ether." I put myself in that hospital 7 times that year. Never occurred to me to stop drinking. My only problem was that I was an over-sick social drinker, drank too much sometimes. When I was in my second year of sobriety, I was at a meeting with 2 of my hoods that were beating his way to be, and a lawyer from Whittier was talking, and he spent a great deal of time that night on the second step. And by that time, I was ready to admit I was a lot of things, but certainly not insane. And this guy said, "Before you can be restored to sanity, you have to be insane." And I hit my friend and said, "See, that step doesn't apply to me." And I was in my second year. He looked at me and said, "I don't know too many sane people that have been in a PD hospital 7 times in 1 year." I could spend an hour on that one. Anyway, to get on with it and title like drunk a lot, I can tell you about my last week of drinking, which will tell you all about me. Everything there is to know. On Monday, I ripped apart the bank where I'd banked for a lot of years because of the dust of my checks. Not because I didn't have any money, because he couldn't read them. I thought that was ridiculous. On Tuesday, I'm told I threw a chair through my attorney's window because I found out my attorney was hailing her divorce. I thought that was the silliest thing I'd ever heard. Nobody, including me or Al-Anon, remembers Wednesday. On Thursday, I fell off the stage in front of 300 customers at a luncheon in downtown Los Angeles. And on Friday, June 29, 1973, I come out of what I now understand to be a blackout in one of my favorite saloons over near Disneyland, drinking double martinis with 6 people I didn't know and I was buying. And now you know what you're looking at. Arrogant, egotistical big shot. And I remember standing in that saloon thinking, this is ridiculous. Not that I'm buying these 6 Yahoos drinks that I don't even know, but my wife of 29 years is splitting. So I decide to split. I had no idea where I was going. Probably Phoenix. That was always one of my favorite drinking towns. And I went to the bank to get some money, and I was too late. My partner, my wife, and Al-Anon had already been there. So I went home to get my clothes, and Venus and I have lived next door to the Methodist parsonage in Fullerton for, 32 years now. 14 different preachers had me for neighbor during those years. But the guy was there to help start the alcoholic ward at St. Jude's Hospital in Fullerton. And he used to talk to me over the fence about this great alcoholic ward they had at St. Jude's. And I used to say to him, "That's nice, John. I'm glad they did that for those people. But not me." Anyway, somehow or other, I guess my wife and her girlfriend got him over the house, and he talked me into going to St. Jude's that night, about 6 o'clock. And apparently I agreed to go provide I had 1 more water glass of vodka, because by that time I'd switched from Early Times to vodka, because we all know vodka doesn't smell. Just comes out your ears. I'm told by the time we got to the hospital, apparently I changed my mind. It's only a few minutes from my house. I took a swing at the preacher in the admitting room. I broke the nurse's wrist the first time I was there when they tried to give me those detox shots in the butt. So I arrived at St. Jude's Alcoholic Ward on June 29, 1973, at what I hope was the height of my pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. so vividly discussed in chapter 3. And I woke up the next day thinking, what the heck am I doing here? I'm not Catholic and I'm not alcoholic. Why am I in this place? And then I found out why you really have to go to 3 meetings a day. 3 AA meetings a day. 2 a day in the hospital and out every night. I thought that's ridiculous. I tried AA. It didn't work. But I stayed. You don't have to stay. We have bars in the windows and doors. But when I got out, I told people why I stayed. I stayed to get my wife to cancel her third attempt at divorce. I stayed to get my partners to buy me out instead of throw me out like they should have 2 years before. I stayed to get the law off my back, get my kids off my back, get my neighbor, just get people off my back. I went to meet the first person in 14 and a half years sobriety. Gets up in the morning and says, what a nice day. I think I'll quit drinking and join Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't happen that way. We all come here to get the heat off. At least I did. Today I understand why I stayed that day. I couldn't take one more day at Chuck and didn't know it. I couldn't hurt one more person and didn't know it. I couldn't tell one more lie and didn't want them today. I really was sick and tired of being sick and tired and didn't know it. I didn't have another day of drinking left. Not one lousy day. So I went to their silly 3 meetings a day. I didn't have any great spiritual experiences. I didn't see any burning bushes or hear any voices. I was sober quite a few years before I had my first real spiritual experience. I got to hear my wife give her first hour-long Al-Anon talk. I don't care your ears, I'll tell you. I sat there saying, I didn't know she was married before. I started to tell you, a couple of months ago, I was watching a late movie, and Venus was on the couch reading, and she fell asleep, I thought. And right in the middle of this movie, here come a ship commercial. And this lady says to her husband, I'm leaving. Why are you leaving? I can't handle your drinking. I try to quit, I can't. Why don't you call Schick? I don't need any more counseling. They have a medical cure. How long does it take? 10 days and a couple of 2-day follow-ups. And he grabs our hand and says, okay, honey, let's call Schick. And my quiet little 15-year-old Al-Anon black belt wife came up off the couch when I thought she was sound asleep, looked at the TV set, and said, call him yourself, you son of a bitch. I don't think she's talked like that in 10 times in the years we've been married. I started to have a whole series of coincidences happen to me in that hospital, which still happen to me on a daily basis, thank goodness. For example, that first Saturday night in that hospital, I was full of all the things new people in Alcoholics Anonymous are supposed to be full of. Hate, anger, fear, self-pity, and remorse. And I was sitting in my room, overcome with every one of those, and this cute little thing walks in my room, and she says, hi, I'm Virginia, your alcoholic driver. I said, what do you want, kid? She said, I'm taking the AA meeting. I said, not me, you're not, get out. And the nun got me by the ear and said, get in the car. And they hauled me to a Saturday night speaker meeting in Fuller, and I thought, my God, if I say bye now, I'm going to die. I knew 8 people. I was so embarrassed, I said, they'll flush me down the toilet. Never occurred to me why those 8 people were sitting there. Never occurred to me. And this guy spoke that night. I don't remember what he said. I just remember he said he had 5 years of sobriety. I didn't believe that. And he started to tell my story. And all these people were laughing. And I didn't see anything funny. I didn't see anything funny. The next night was even more amazing. They hauled me to a Sunday night discussion meeting, which I still go to quite often. There's usually 30, 40 people at that thing. And there were only 12 that night, because it was a 4th of July weekend. And I walked in that room, and 2 of those 12 people were 15-year drinking friends of mine. And I couldn't believe in the world they were doing there. I hadn't seen them for a while in the hangouts. I wondered where they were. So at the coffee break, I walked up to one of them. I said, what are you doing here? I got a hospital band on. I have to be here. He said, Chucky, alcohol brought me my knees. I'd do something about it. And I said, well, come on, Merle, you're more alcoholic than I am. And everybody laughed. Everybody laughed, and I got my first major resentment in my life. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous never having had a resentment. Never. I knew how to get around resentments before I ever got started. And they're gone.
There wasn't anybody or anything I couldn't make disappear with a couple of double Manhattans. Gone. I came back home and there was no character defects. And 14 and a half years later, I have 7 or 8. Which is a heck of a lot better than the 22 I discovered in my second year of sobriety. You know, it took me about 8 or 9 months of sobriety to become an alcoholic. And as compared to my social drinking, I think it's interesting since I've become an alcoholic, I haven't found it necessary to drink any booze, swallow any pills, or smoke any funny non-habit-forming cigarettes. Anyway, I walked over to the other guy. Hey, what are you doing here? And this clown put his arm around me. Said, sit down, Chuck, it's going to be all right. I thought, my God. What'd they do to him? He put his arm around me. But then I found out one of these guys was sober 2 months, and the other was sober 5 months. And that blew me away. I couldn't believe it. So these two guys and 2 or 3 others started me on a merry program, beating this program to me. I've had this program beat, shoved, rammed, pounded in every section of my body. And still get it on a daily basis, thank goodness. For example, they told me there were 3 rules in Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God I believed them in the beginning. They told me you go to a meeting every day and you don't drink. You read the big book every day and you don't drink. You talk to another alcoholic every day and you don't drink. If you do those 3 things and don't drink, you might not get drunk. And if you don't get drunk, your life might get better. And when I got out of hospital every night for 90 days, every stinking night for 90 days, at 7:30 I broke out in a cold sweat. Because every night at 7:30 my phone would ring and here's one of these clowns. Hiya, Chuck, how are you? Wonderful. Well, the part of the big book you read today, I only read at night. Well, I always you talk today, I'm talking to you. What meeting you going to tonight? I made up my mind. And then hang up the phone and come get me and hold me these meetings night after night after night. I'm one of these true victims of bringing the body and giving the mind a chance to catch up. I went to over 200 meetings my first 9 days of sobriety by the back of my neck. God bless, boy. And they take me to these meetings and shove my phone book in people's face. Hey, put your phone over Chuck's book. He's a sick mother. He's going to need your help. And I yank my book. I say, what do I want his phone number for? He's a truck driver. I'd like to talk about that today because I have 2 sponsors today. One of these clowns will have 40 years here, another month and a half. The other one has 27 years. And one of them's a used car salesman, and the other one's a retired mailman. Well, in my life, and thank God they are, because they both know me better than I'll ever know myself. Because the guy is dead now, by the name of Jack Higgins. Oh, I didn't finish the story. On the 91st day, nobody called me. On the 91st day, nobody called. 7:30, 20 minutes to 8, 10 minutes to 8, nobody called. So 10 minutes to 8 on my 91st day of sobriety, I did an amazing thing. I called one of them. What's the matter? Don't you love me anymore? And they said, hey, boy, we've called you everywhere it is. We got newer ones to haul. You want it, you come get it. And they hung up. And I thought, is that what they mean by we care? So on my 91st day of sobriety, I go to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous by myself, absolutely petrified, because I had ripped every soul in every meeting, never missed a person. And I knew if I walked to that meeting without my usual 2 or 3 bodyguards, excuse me, those people would throw me through the window. But I finally got the courage, and I walked in, and 3 or 4 of them come heading at me, one lady swinging her purse, and I thought, here we go. And they stuck out their hands and said, hi, Chuck, nice to see you. And that fear went away, it's never returned. Hasn't been easy, but nobody ever told me it would be. My sponsor, Mike Ross, is here tonight. Mike's going to be sober 40 years. I've known him almost 30 years. I knew him 5 years before I realized he didn't drink. Going to cocktail parties with him. When I got sober, I said to my wife, Mike, she said, why don't you call Mike? Mike has 25 years. Why don't you call Mike? I said, I don't want to see that SOB. So somewhere around 2 or 3 months sober, Venus and I walked into a Saturday night meeting in Fulton, and Mike was the speaker. And I spotted him. I said, my God, honey, let's get out of here before he sees me. And he spotted me. And in front of all these 150 people in Fulton that I'm still hiding from, he gets up there and Mike says, my God, Chuck Harper, I've been carrying his application for 5 years. Then he gets me with Eddie Riggin, which I'm sure some of you knew. Little Eddie Riggin, talk to you like this. Hey, kid, you want to quit drinking on an all-time basis? Jesus, Eddie, I have to. Slam me the wall and say, wrong answer. Hey, kid, are you an alcoholic? That's what they tell me, Eddie. Slam me the wall and say, wrong answer. 8 months over, I'm out of Radford Street. I raise my hand in a discussion meeting. Eddie says to Mike, look at the kid, he's got his hand up. What do you have your hand up for? I said, I want to tell these people about me. They know all about you. You're a drunken loser. Shut up, sit down, let them save your life. If you're sober less than a year, your lips are moving, you're lying. God, it took me a long time to understand that one. In October 1973, let's see, July, August, September, 4 months sober. Eddie and Mike call me to the Southern California Convention, Anaheim Stadium. Anaheim Convention Center, 5,000 people. I met 4,852 of them. This is Chuck Harper, an alcoholic. I finally looked at Mike and said, hey, I thought I was the only one who could say I was an alcoholic. He said, if you deny it, you think they're going to believe you and me? There's a guy that's dead now that I owe an awful lot to. A guy by the name of Jack Higgins. Used to come out to our men's tag and phone on Thursday nights. When I met Jack, he was in his 70s. 5 foot nothing. 120 pounds soaking wet. 25 years sober. Retired Navy captain. Commander, I don't know, tough as nails. Almost every Thursday night. Every Thursday night for over 2 years, that old man got me under the tree after the meeting for another 15 minutes. I'd be running down the driveway to my car and tap me on the shoulder and say, under the tree, kid. 6 months later, he looks at me and says, when are you going to get the program, boy? I said, my God, Jack, I haven't had a drink for 6 months. What do you want from me? He says, Alcoholics Anonymous knows how to quit drinking. Anybody can quit drinking. Smack a cop, you won't drink for 90 days. Alcoholics Anonymous learned how to live without drinking. And I said, you're crazy. He says, I sure am, but you're crazier. He says, I haven't seen you fold a chair, wash the ashtrays, clean the cups, scrub the floor, pick and be a secretary, get in a group. I said, wait a minute. He said, don't tell me wait a minute. Boy, you want to let you do what I tell you. And he wasn't even my sponsor. I can't tell you why, but I became secretary of one group, started mopping the floors, folding the chairs, gotten in a group, gotten H&I, started going to jail, started going to hospitals. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but my life got better. On my first birthday, I said, tonight they'll leave me alone. It's my birthday. Taps me on the shoulder and says, on the tree, kid. I said, now what? He said, when are you going to get the program, boy? I said, my God, Jack, I've been a drink for a year. What do you want from me? He said, you're not working the steps. You're working the steps, you're going to get drunk. And I caused him to have a hilarious convulsion on the ground when I said to him, Jack, I have worked them all but 4 and 5. And he fell on the ground. I picked him up and he said, and I got that speech from the forward of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. These are the stories of 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind abiding. And the purpose of this book is to tell you precisely how they recovered. He looked at me and says, it does not say in chapter 5, half measures avail us 50%. You don't say that. You work the steps in order, boy, your life will get better. And somewhere in my second year of sobriety, I started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in order, and my life got better. And I didn't know why. Probably the best he ever got me was right after my second birthday, just before he died. When I was in St. Jude, Sister Joan gave us all of those 20 question cards one day. Are you an alcoholic, yes or no? And I threw mine on the floor. I thought I'd take that test. A year before, my wife had called me and said, come here, they're having a test on Channel 4 for drunks. And Channel 4 sat there and read those 20 questions, and I sat there in my early times in water and got 20 no's. As any good pressing alcoholic should. Do you have a problem with drinking? No, I get all I want. Is alcohol causing a problem in your home life? Not mine, hers, baby, but not mine. And Sister Joan picked that card up and folded over the bottom part where it says you get 3 yeses, you're a basket case. He said, take the test, Chucky, and try and be honest. And the first time I took that test with any sense of honesty, I got 18 yeses. And I laughed about that for over 2 years. And just before he died, Jack got me out of the tree for the last time. And he said, hey, boy, I'm sick and tired of listening to you talk about the 18 yeses. Let's talk about the two no's. And the two no's turned out to be lies. Not lies at the time, because when I got sober, I didn't know Chuck. Not lies at the time, because when I got sober, I didn't know that alcohol is not, never was my problem. Alcohol was my solution to my problem, Chuck. That's the day most people run in this program when they can't handle that fact. So Jack and I stood there and discussed the two no's. One of them's comical, one of them's sad. One of them was, do you crave a drink at a certain time daily? And I'd put no because I drank all day. And the other was, has alcohol caused you to seek lower companions or inferior environment? And I put no, I drink in the best punchline saloons all over this country. And an old man looked at me and said, hey boy, by your own admission, your last 6 months of drinking, you drank alone and you can't get any lower than that. But all you have left is yourself. That's as low as you can go. My God, isn't that a terrible thing to get hit in the face with 2 years sober? But that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. The truth only hurts once if you let it. I had quite an experience. When I got sober, I had a six-year-old granddaughter I wasn't allowed to see. She wasn't allowed near me, and I wasn't allowed near her. And by the time I was 2 years sober and Tracy was eight, she was coming to spend the weekend with us, and I was very excited. And I came home on a Friday night after one of those lovely two-hour drives from the L.A. airport to Fullerton on a Friday night in a wonderful mood. And I come roaring in the house, and Tracy was sitting on the floor reading, and I plopped down on my chair, and my Al-Anon says to me, aren't you going to your meeting tonight? That's on page 83 of the Al-Anon book. Now, my wife knows that Friday night step study is where I discovered the enemy, and it's still one of my favorite meetings. And I said, not tonight, I'm too tired. And that eight-year-old got up off the floor, climbed up my lap and kissed me on the cheek, and said, I love you since you quit drinking, Papa. That'll rip your belly button. I don't have to tell you what I did. I flew out of that stupid chair. And I went to that Friday night step study meeting, and I told those people what had happened to me. And we sat there and laughed and cried and laughed and cried about the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. Tracy's 21 now, going on 35. One of those. Well, when she was 11 or 12, she came by the house one night and said, Grandpa, she was in her first year of junior high school. She said, Grandpa, our health teacher said, next week we're going to study drug abuse and alcoholism. I said, that's wonderful, honey. She said, we're going to have outside speakers. I said, that's marvelous. She says, I raised my hand and told the teacher, my grandpa's an alcoholic, he'll talk. I thought my wife was going to drop her pants. And she looks at me with those big black eyes. She says, you will come talk to my friends, won't you, Grandpa? And my Al-Anon says, say no to that one, big shot. And I had the time of my life. There were 32 kids in that class, and that teacher had them all write out one question they could ask me. And they signed their names anonymously, boy person, girl person. And I told those kids that alcoholism was a disease that was an allergy to their body coupled with the obsession of the mind, along with a spiritual deficiency. And it was incurable like cancer. It was arrestable like diabetes. And the way you arrested it was you didn't drink one day at a time. And I told the people that had the best record of not drinking one day at a time were the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told them the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous are a group of men and women that love each other back to health and sanity, if you let them. But that was the hard part, letting another human being get inside. And those kids ate it up. And I sat there and answered those 32 questions to the best of my ability. You could all write them out in 10 minutes. You know what those kids asked me. Boy person, is it true that my dad says you can't be an alcoholic if you only drink beer? Girl person, my mama has 3 martinis and a joint for dinner and passes out. Is she an alcoholic? On and on. It was incredible. I walked out of that school 8 feet tall. The next night, Tracy Ann came by and brought me 32 handwritten thank you notes from those kids. And Vince and I sat in the patio and laughed and cried and laughed and cried like we have many times since, and reading those 32 notes. Dear Mr. Harper, you was funny when you was drunk. I'm glad you ain't drunk no more. The 11-year-old girl wrote, Dear Mr. Harper, I'm lucky my mama doesn't drink, but my grandmother does. I think I'll give her your phone number. 12-year-old boy wrote something I hope I'll never forget. He wrote, I don't think I'll ever drink, but I think if I think about drinking, I'll think about you. Ain't that something? Ain't that something? At 9 years sober, I had to go to Japan on a 10-day business trip with 100 customers. And I was really looking forward to it. Because I had a whole list of meetings to go to in Tokyo. We were in Tokyo 5 days. And I never got to any meetings in Tokyo because I had to work every night. And on the fifth night, they had a banquet in one of these outrageously gorgeous outdoor Japanese gardens. It was the most immaculate thing I've ever been to in my life. They had food from 7 different countries on 7 different banquet tables. And if you're new or nearly new and you don't hear the laughter in this program, and you don't hear the dignity, self-respect, and sense of humor that God returns to us in these meetings, listen to this story. And each one of these banquet tables had a huge ice sculpture on it. Eagles, seagulls, lions. It was gorgeous. During the middle of this meeting, the president of our company from here, this Japanese company here, walks up to me and says, "Chuck-san, pretty soon we drink toast to chairman." I said, "I know." He said, "We drink hot sake from wooden cup." I said, "I know." He said, "You drink hot sake?" Now, they knew I didn't drink. I just never tried to explain alcoholics and Amish to them. And I said, "Yoda-san, you know I won't do that." And he stayed on me and on me. To make a long story short, pretty soon he walks up and he says, "Chuck-san, you do not drink hot sake from a wooden cup, and chairman discovers this, he will be insulted, and I cannot predict your future with this company." Now, I don't know why, but as our friend John Ackerland says, the devil got into me. And I don't know what possessed me to say this, but I looked at him and I said, "Okay, Yoda-san, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll drink your hot sake from that wooden cup. But 2 hours and 22 Manhattans from now, when I shove that frozen seagull up the chairman's ass, don't come crying to me." And he goes, "Ooh." "You drink 7-Up," I said, "I think so." As Paul says, if you're having trouble with God, bar mine till you find yours, because listen to the rest of the story. On the 10th night, we're in Kyoto, and I was an absolute raving maniac. I didn't know why. 9.5 years sober. I had my God, I had my books, I had my literature, I had everything with me, and I was crazy and didn't know why. I was discovered it was because I had never been away from you for 10 days. That's why I was crazy. So what do you do when you're crazy? You get on your knees. And they say, "You better watch what you pray for," and they mean it. Because I got on my knees at 10th night in Kyoto, and I told God, "I'm going crazy, do something." And the next day we were at a Buddhist shrine in Kyoto, and they had a Shinto Buddhist fortune-telling priest. All my customers bugged me to go have my fortune told, and I'm going to read it to you, it's very short. 8,000 miles from home, God says, "You want help, boy? Here it comes." What you do is you clap your hands 3 times to awaken the gods. And then you bow 3 times to get their attention. And then you throw a few yen at the Shinto priest. And it's a wild 2-minute orgasm. Fireworks, bugles, drums, snakes. It's a wild 2-minute thing. 8,000 miles from home, this British Shinto priest read me my fortune. And it reads, "You will have great assistance. You will have divine assistance, so that all troubles depart and only happiness remains. If you are earnest, sincere, help the weak, comfort the poor, and if you are prudent, upright, and humble, all will go as you wish." Now, if that isn't the best one-sentence version of the 12 steps, I've never heard it. However, it goes on to say, "But if you succumb to fleshly pleasures or drunkenness, suffering will result." 1983 was a heck of a year for me. In March of 1983, a lot of people lost a lot of money because I lived to see 60. In June of 1983, I got to celebrate 10 years of glorious sobriety in A&A. And in November of 1983, that squirrely little black belt island out of mine who had the audacity to try and divorce me 3 times my last 2 years of drinking, she and I went to the AA convention in Hawaii to celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. And that's only by the grace of God, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people like you that I love so much. Thank you very much for having me.